So our first speaker this afternoon is Dick Lipton. Dick is well known to many of us, but for those of you who may not know Dick quite as well, I'll just observe that he has held many distinctive leadership positions in the tax community for a very long time, and he has been a substantial, or perhaps a prodigious is a better way to describe it, contributor to tax education for a very long time, which is been to the great benefit of those of us who have followed his speaking and his writing over the many years. And gratefully he's here today to talk with us about the economic substance doctrine and the Liberty Global case. And I'll say that when I think about the economic substance doctrine, it's one of those foundational concepts that we all learn pretty early on in our careers. And then if you're anything like me, you spend the rest of your time trying to understand it and figuring out how to apply it. And gratefully, Dick is here to help us with that today. So please join me in welcoming Dick Lipton.
Thanks very much. Is this on now? Can you hear me? Yeah, okay. As Craig said, I'm going to be talking about economic substance, and I'm going to talk about it in the context of two recent cases. One's called Liberty Global, which has gotten a lot of press. The other one is called OTE, and it's actually a pending case in the tax court. And I think it may be the more interesting of the two, only because it's a case where it sure looks like economic substance absolutely does not apply, but the IRS is arguing about it. And that, to me, is the more important thing to think about, is not what the courts do, but what does the IRS think, and how has the IRS's thinking sort of expanded over time? Now, I must admit, I have a set of slides. I'm going to use them a bit, but I really hate slides. And anybody who's heard me speak knows I hate slides. So let's talk about the economic substance doctrine. Under the economic substance doctrine, tax benefits are disallowed if a transaction has no economic substance. It doesn't change the taxpayer's economic position, and there's no realistic possibility of profits from the transaction. I prefer to look at it a little differently, and we'll get there. The economic substance doctrine is really one of the judicial doctrines dating all the way back, of course, to Gregory v. Helvering. And what it really comes down to is the courts recognize that sometimes the literal application of the code doesn't get to the result that the court believes Congress intended. And when you have that situation, the courts had to find a way around the result, and they came up with the economic substance doctrine. It's related theoretically to the so-called business purpose test. People can call them sort of twins. If a transaction has no business purpose, it won't be respected. Well, what is business purpose? If you ask that question, is saving taxes is not a business purpose. And yet, every single person in this room is a tax advisor. You get paid by people who are trying to save taxes. And they're not doing, and by the way, they're deducting your fees. But that's still a valid business deduction if it's done in connection with a trade or business. So to simply say there's no business purpose in something goes too far. You really need to think about economic substance more in terms of this is a judicial doctrine to get around the literal terms of the code. And it developed effectively into a two-part test, which is called the objective and the subjective. The objective test is whether or not there was a change in the taxpayer's economic position. If you enter into a transaction and it changes your economic position, that's one step of the conjunctive test. And the second is, it was entered into for non-tax purposes. So you can change your position, but if you're doing it solely for tax purposes, that's also not viewed as good. This is just sort of a background on economic substance, but trust me, I'm going to come around a little bit more. And the tax court has said, congressional intent matters. This really goes back to Gregory v. Helvering. As you all know, Gregory v. Helvering was where there was a distribution. It would have resulted in more favorable tax consequences, and the Supreme Court said that's not what was intended. And it focused on the fact there was no economic purpose other than tax savings and making the distribution that occurred.